Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
All right, so the Houston Sports Awards last night. I would say the Astros very warmly received that were there. Jim Crane got Executive of the Year. Jose Altuve got Moment of the Year for his home run in Game 6. Alex Bregman was named Athlete of the Year in a town with a lot of really good athletes.
And apparently, just according to people I follow on Twitter, there was outrage all over the land, especially in New York and L.A., about the fact that a couple of Astros were honored for doing well in a year in which Major League Baseball investigated and found no wrongdoing or evidence of cheating.
Yeah.
Somehow, the Yankees, the Dodgers, people around the world, or at least the baseball world, are convinced that no matter what the Astros do, it's always going to be tinged by like 3 years from now, Jose Altuve will win the MVP, and people in their minds, in their memories, it'll be like, oh yeah, he cheated that year too.
So there were a lot of people backlashing on the Astros last
night? Apparently. I don't know how bad
it was. On Twitter?
All I saw on Twitter were people talking about how angry everybody was elsewhere. And like various random people. I never know if that's genuine or not because everybody's hypersensitive on Twitter. It's kind of like when you see that something's trending on Twitter and you try to look into it. And you realize, like, I think it's trending just because people are saying it's trending.
Yeah. And so, that's why I don't want to get, I don't want to get too worked up about people just using the collective noun people to say people are backlashing on Jose Altuve.
Is it everybody?
Yeah, right. Well, our friend James Palmer did that yesterday. We didn't point that out.
I know, I didn't. He did a little bit of that.
Everybody's saying. I think people, people listen to the show enough to know that we've got it queued up. People know that we're friends with James. I think even when we brought James on, we'd be like, hey, that whole thing, you got Frank Clark worked up by just saying, everybody's saying this. Yeah. Let's refresh so people know what we're talking about.
After the Chiefs won their playoff
game. Yeah, after the AFC Championship game. James Palmer had posted before the game some quotes from Frank Clark about Derrick Henry before the game. And they were quotes that I could see being used as bulletin board material for the Titans. As it turned out, if it was, it didn't work because the Chiefs destroyed the Titans in that game. Here is James Palmer with Frank Clark on the field using a sort of rile him up tactic that we were just talking about.
Past two games, each game, 70 yards, over 200 yards each game. I know damn well we weren't going to win the game if we let that happen. They come in here, he ran for 70 yards, they call him the best rusher in the league. We're sitting this home early.
I posted the comments that you said to me. And all over social media, everybody said you better watch your back, that you're saying things that you can't cash. Everybody on social media said,
they must not know who I am yet.
All right, take it down, Jonesy. Everybody on social media. you got a football player who's in this adrenaline-fueled euphoria. And Frank Clark has a mean streak. Yeah. And you're like, everyone on social media. The only thing Frank Clark hears is everyone.
It's an effective tactic. A lot of people use it these days, especially on the internet.
James Palmer.
Because remember, every now and then we'll get somebody that'll tell us that everybody hates Ross Tucker. And we're like, please produce these people because I love Ross Tucker.
I do too.
We have Ross Tucker on every Friday, It's one of my favorite moments of the week. I would say I think Ross, he probably gets a 90% approval rating.
Yeah.
I think most people like him. There's 10% that don't like it. Every now and then I get agitated with him. I get angry at him, and he likes that. But when he comes in with some mass narrative about Houston teams or whatnot, I call him on it.
You do.
But that's the thing that also angers other people, so I get it. But you can't listen to Ross for 10 minutes, and I challenge you to listen to him talk about anything non-Houston and not fall in love with
That's
him.
That's right. He's a treasure. So that was just an example of sort of riling up backlash. And there were people who were probably looking at the Astros winning all these awards last night going, oh, look at these cheaters taking home all the cheaters were the best of the best in the city of Houston.
Dez pointed out on Twitter, one of our dear and longtime listeners, She showed the Gritty, the Flyers mascot, banging an Astros trash can at the Flyers Penguins game.
Okay, so this is a hockey game.
Yeah.
A sport that Houston doesn't even have.
Yeah.
In Pennsylvania, between two Pennsylvania teams,
neither
city wronged by the Astros anywhere along the way, and Gritty, the Flyers mascot.
The mascot that is just it's supposed to be like what you're kind of maybe some of these suburbs 30 miles outside of Philadelphia, what the residents look like. That's what Gritty is supposed to be. That's the a lot of times people are like, what is Gritty anyway? You'd be like, oh, he's like one of those guys that you see.
That's
like,
what Philadelphia,
like one of those guys you see at the gas station. And
a big fat furry creature.
Kind of like the New Jersey suburbs of Philadelphia.
Oh, southern
like when
Jersey.
You get into Jersey, but they still think they're Philly or whatever. Right. Yeah.
Basically what you see in your nightmares.
Kind of maybe like, or Harrisburg. Like that's a Harrisburg road crew worker or
Central
something.
Pennsylvania.
Yeah, yes. Yeah.
That's
what Gritty is.
That might be a real person from Central Pennsylvania. That's Central Pennsylvania, underrated in its strangeness and deliverance-like qualities.
It's hard to tell the Amish from the non-Amish in some of those places.
It is. Absolutely is. So that's a hockey game.
The Amish
game
are the drunk ones, usually.
Yeah, no, dude.
It's true.
Amish like to party. That is a mascot at a hockey game in Pennsylvania banging on a trash can with an Astros logo on it to get the crowd riled up.
So you're going to hear from it.
So it's this just in. It's relevant.
It's going to be a running joke for a long time.
How do you think it's going to be on the road for the Astros? We know they're the opposing team. They're the road team. They're a good team. So they probably always get booed the way a garden variety road team that's good would. How do you think it's going to be this year?
I think for one, they're going to get booed. It'll be interesting because the most vocal are also usually the most idiotic. The bullpen pitchers are going to get a ton of abuse, and they're the ones that had zero to do with it. Especially guys that are on the team now that weren't on the team in 2017 are going to get accused of being
poor. Framber Valdez is sitting in the bullpen, like, what did I do?
Jordan's gonna get his 20th home run. People are sign stealer,
cheater.
You only did it because you're stealing signs, not because you're a 265.
Right. He's like, I was
specimen.
15 when it happened. Yeah.
There's going to be a lot of that. I think what I worry most about for the people doing their jobs and how it's going to affect them, honestly, is Callis and Blummer. I think those guys, I think there are going to be a lot of people that station themselves underneath the broadcast booth and make a nuisance of themselves.
Interesting.
Which is kind of, it's going to be a pain in the butt for them.
Yeah.
I would imagine that they're going to have to deal with that all year long.
Blummer might yell back.
I know. You know what? The craziest, weirdest take that I've seen. Oh, I think I deleted it. That crazy guy. Oh, no. I put it in our show prep as for the topic. This. David Wohl, who I guess is apparently the father of Jacob Wohl, who is a guy that got pinched for doing some weird stuff politically. He tweeted this out to his 40,000 followers or so. I'd rather be a registered sex offender than a player on the Astros team. Disgusting cheaters and liars. Which begs the question, which sex crime would you commit if somebody tried to force you to be on the Astros?
Can you please list power ranking of sex crimes?
What exactly are you talking about? What the hell does that mean?
Dude caught a lot of heat for that on Twitter.
He's the kind of guy that
but you don't post something like that if you're not looking for people to come after you.
Yeah.
So I looked at him like, he's an idiot.
But the first thing I thought when he said that, though, too, is like, okay, obviously you're exaggerating, I hope. But also, There are half the guys on the Astros this year won't have been on the Astros in 2017.
Oh, yeah.
And I feel bad for them also.
Yeah. Yeah, they're all getting painted with the same brush.
Dave Hudgens, who's he's with Toronto now.
Okay.
Dave Hudgens, who was the hitting coach for the Astros for a long time. Remember, everybody wanted to fire him back in 2013 and 14 because apparently it was his fault that guys who can't hit baseballs couldn't hit baseballs.
Apparently it's his fault that Brian Bogusevic is the starting center fielder. Matt Dominguez is the starting
third
baseman.
How come you can't take this guy who hit 187 in the minors and turn him into a major league stud?
Fire the
hitting coach!
That's what we should have done yesterday when we're trying to feel better about Houston sports. Is just go back and look at the roster of the 2013 Astros. Like, I get it. They cheated, and there's some turmoil. They had to fire the manager and the GM. Let's just be happy that Brett Wallace isn't the first baseman anymore. Wallace is in his gigantic pants aren't the first baseman anymore.
What if we go back and do a deep dive and we do hear trash can banging? It's like, no! They screwed...
all the way back to 2013.
They were screwing themselves out of the number one overall pick.
We don't tank here. No days off, man. No days off.
I would be angry if they were tub thumping in 2013 and hurting your chances of getting a number one overall pick.
Yes, yes. Yeah. It would have been detrimental.
So, but Dave Hudgens was pretty open as it goes, but mostly what he was saying was, look, we've always used video. We're going to use video. I'm going to try to get pitches and tips. It's the real-time aspect of it. Yeah. That was so, and he kind of admitted to knowing about it without admitting to knowing about it, if I can say that. Mm-hmm. He deferred to the investigation a few times. But the other relevant thing that Jim Crane said yesterday was that at some point there will be an apology from the players.
Okay, yeah. We had him on the show for about 5 or 6 minutes. And at the very beginning of him talking to us, he apologized on behalf of the team. And that was something that I had heard a lot of national people complaining about. Like, boy, Jim Crane didn't even apologize in his press conference, which I didn't know. I didn't go back and watch it to see if that was true or not. But he, at the very beginning of our interview with him yesterday, he's like, we apologize once again to our fans and our sponsors. And so that was good. He was one of a handful of interviews, rapid fire, that we had at the end of the show yesterday.
And then in some of the other comments, he had said that, look, the whole team hasn't been together. Everybody's off wherever they are at spring training. When we can get everybody together, there's going to be some kind of a statement issued. Yeah. And it is, I give them a pass on that. I understand why people aren't inclined to, but it's whenever there's an investigation like this and you're expected to as a player, every single player that talks is also going to be, by effect, speaking for everybody else on the team. That's a weighty thing that you got to be sure you get just right.
Especially when it's Bregman and Altuve, who are two leaders on the team.
I'm going to do it. I'm going to wear a bow tie tomorrow.
Those who are just tuning in, Seth taught himself how to tie a bow tie off of YouTube
and
yesterday.
I could
not. That's the big news of the day.
Honestly, it might be this is sad and pathetic. That's the biggest sense of accomplishment I've had in the last 5 years. I felt like at the beginning I wasn't going to be able to do it, and I stuck at it. And, you know, they like to call it grit these days.
Yeah.
The teachers, it's all about the grit. Mm-hmm. I feel like I was taught by one of these new age teachers that's trying to teach grit. I felt like I couldn't do it, but I persisted. And just like as it is in mathematics, so it goes in bow tie tying. You just have to keep at it.
You stay at it, yeah.
Yeah.
You used YouTube.
I used YouTube,
as
yeah.
As the de facto instructor.
I gave three different videos. I've never given a thumbs down on YouTube before, and I've watched some pretty hateful crap on YouTube. I gave three thumbs down to three different videos.
Did you finally find a fourth video
I found
that
a fourth
taught you
one.
How to do
it? You know what? I'll retweet that later. I'll retweet it after the show.
Yeah,
at
did
Seth
you?
C-Pain.
Yeah, you should do that.
The guys that I liked.
Did you give equal level praise to the YouTube video that taught you how to do it as you did criticism to the three that didn't?
I just gave a thumbs up. I didn't leave comments.
Okay, that's equal parts. Okay,
I just gave a thumbs up. Yeah.
So you didn't comment.
I'm learning to tie a bow tie and actually get my comments in line. They gave me a script last night. I did not follow it,
yeah.
But I tried real hard. Every year at the Houston Sports Award, they give me a script. And for 2 days beforehand, I'll kind of be like, I'll look it over and I'll try to memorize the lines and everything. And as soon as that light comes on, gone.
Yeah,
but just completely gone.
As it should be. You improv well. You're good off the cuff.
That's what they have the wrestlers do. So Booker T told me. Booker T said he was always a mess in rehearsals, but then as soon as it was live, he'd go and he'd be perfect.
The best ones are the ones that don't need a script.
He didn't say he'd be perfect, but you know what I'm saying.
Yeah, yeah. No, I know exactly what you're saying. Get a nice text. I think this is Pave Text who texted this. Sean, you did a good job with the interviews yesterday at the award show. Jerry Jones was awesome. I would encourage you to go back and listen to some of those interviews. I co-hosted with Clint yesterday afternoon, and the back end of the show was heavy with interviews, but we had Jerry Jones. We had Jim Crane for a few minutes. We had Oliver Luck. We had Rudy Tomjanovich.
Yeah.
We had Jimbo Fisher. Was really, really good. He and Clint started to nerd out on quarterback stuff. It was pretty cool.
That's probably, you know what, check the podcast out of that especially.
Yes, yeah.
That was one I was thinking actually as I was listening to it. Wow, I know there are a lot of like hardcore podcast listeners who are really like that.
Yeah. They'll,
so go to the Clint Sterner podcast.
They'll like it. I had one of those moments yesterday, Seth, where I realized like we're lucky to do what we do. I was talking to my brother Kevin, who I'm, you know, we're real good friends, very close. We don't talk very much just because we both got our own lives going on. He just got his first iPhone like 2 years ago. He's one of these people. He's not on any social media.
Yeah.
Like he's just, you know, he's Kevin.
Amish. He's a non-drunk Amish.
He's Kevin, yeah. Right. So, but we were talking yesterday. I had to catch up with him on some things. He's coming in for the wedding. And I told him, he's like, where, he heard me, he could tell I was in the car. He's like, where are you on your way to? And I said, I'm on my way to the Houston Sports Awards. I'm doing the afternoon show today. And I started listing the people that we were going to have on the show. And we didn't get all of them eventually, but I'm telling him, yeah, we're going to have Mary Lou Retton and Carl Lewis, Rudy Tomjanovich are all going into the Houston Sports Hall of Fame, and Jerry Jones is going to be there. He's like, wait. He's like, you're interviewing all of these people? And I'm like, well, yeah. He goes, that's so cool. Like, that's, you're like, you're interviewing Rudy Tomjanovich. You're interviewing Mary Lou Retton. You realize she was like the most famous person in the world for like 2 months.
Well, that's what
I'm like, it is pretty badass when you think about
that's
it.
That's what I was thinking about last night, because Rudy Tomjanovich, and I've been around and I've had conversations with him before, and it's, you know, I talk to a lot of basketball and football and baseball players.
Right.
There's something about Carl Lewis and Mary Lou Retton that, especially the Olympics back in the 80s.
Yeah.
It was a different deal.
Big
the
deal.
70s and 80s, it was different than it is now. And Carl Lewis and Mary Retton were just such huge icons. Like you said the most famous person in the world for 2 months. I think some people might have heard that as kind of for a couple months. Like,
No. Not like, a one-hit wonder.
No, like the most famous person in the world.
Right.
Very famous for the rest of her life, but the most famous person in the world for a while. That's how big the Olympics were. And they gave me this Wheaties box with Mary Lou Retton on it, to like, we did a little playful thing with it. Yep. But I wanted to steal the Wheaties box, because I can remember sitting at my grandmother's table as I was going out to work with my grandpa for the summer on the farm. Every morning I'd eat, and the Wheaties box was a big deal.
Yeah,
you know, and they were just monsters. They were just so huge. And yep. Carl Lewis, obviously, for multiple Olympics. It was really, really cool to be able to be a part of
that.
Yeah,
I'm glad you pointed that out. I was being literal.
Yeah.
She maintained fame forever. Obviously, she's still famous, but she was the most famous person in the world. She held the belt of most famous person in the world for like 2 months.
Like more, even
it
more
was probably
so
probably taken
than,
by Gorbachev or somebody.
It was probably Gorbachev, Reagan, and Gaddafi after that. Right. I think it was
84-ish.
Yeah.
So,
Who was it? Did Reagan go after Gaddafi? I think Reagan bombed Gaddafi. Yeah.
Sounds right. The timeline matches up. So last night, I don't know if you heard this when you were doing your thing last night, because you were very occupied during the sports awards because you were the roving reporter there. So I don't know if you had a chance to listen to the crowd reaction to some of the nominees of some of the awards. In particular, Coach of the Year.
Mm-hmm.
Coach of the Year, the nominees were the Rice women's basketball coach, whose name escapes me at the moment, A.J. Hinch, Kelvin Sampson, and Bill O'Brien. Kelvin Sampson ended up winning the award. Bill O'Brien got, I'm not going to say it was overwhelming, you know, probably not Astros on the road this year level boos, but at an event that was $25,000 a table, that was full of people who probably fit the profile of Texan suite holders, expensive season ticket holders. And at an event where normally you don't boo people, let's just be honest, it's a black tie / formal-ish event. Bill O'Brien got booed at the Houston Sports Awards last night.
I did not realize that.
Sparse booze, but booze nonetheless.
I was hustling off to something to do, and I did not realize that.
Yeah.
Wow, I'm kind of glad I get very awkward in those moments.
Yeah.
I don't like being a part of that. I go very middle child. I get very middle child in a divorced family. I get like, I just want everybody to be happy. Oh, gosh. Tina Langley, by the way, is the
Tina Langley.
Nice
thank
ones.
You. Yes.
did they? They didn't show. They didn't. I guess was his face on the screen when that
yes.
was happening.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. You saw the claps, videos. The video packages were incredible.
Were the claps mixed in with booze? Was there enough that he could?
I just heard sparse booze.
Okay.
Yeah.
Sparse booze. I'm very uncomfortable.
Seth,
here.
I've never experienced anybody. Seth, it's the Houston Sports Awards. Like, it's one of these things that's meant to feel good about everybody. And by definition, it's people who are supposed to be really, really good at their jobs.
The other time that things got awkward was it when Andre Johnson was inducted into the Ring of Honor and they introduced Rick Smith, and Rick Smith was booed by the entire stadium.
And that was
very
when the
special
that was,
moment.
That was when the 2017 season was sliding into the toilet.
Yeah.
That was the Arizona Cardinals game. That was the last game the Texans won that year.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, I do remember that.
Yeah, that was awkward too.
He left for different reasons, Rick Smith, obviously, but
yeah.
that was towards the end of his tenure as general manager.
It's interesting. I would say this. I think at least part of that is a measure of just how intense the scrutiny of football is, and like how intense the passion is for football. And I get that. I understand it. And I understand people being dissatisfied with Bill O'Brien. I voiced my disapproval too, obviously. Sure. I guess I just he incites a certain emotion that I feel. I'm trying to think about various other coaches who've had moderate regular season success, but then, you know, get very frustrated in the postseason. Was Marvin Lewis getting booed at any point during his tenure in Cincinnati?
I don't know.
Because Marvin Lewis is the guy. Right now, O'Brien looks a little bit like he's on a Marvin Lewis track.
If he doesn't start having
success in the playoffs, right. he's on Marty Schottenheimer. Was Marty Schottenheimer, who has had great regular season teams but would always lose or very regularly lose in the first round of the playoffs or lose in the divisional round, did he get booed in Kansas City?
Yeah, I don't know.
I'd have to
ask Kansas City people or Charger people. He coached the Chargers. The Chargers fired him after like a 14-2 season.
Schottenheimer, it was the damnedest thing with Schottenheimer because he would just routinely churn out good regular season football teams that failed in the playoffs.
Yeah.
So he's really, would Bill O'Brien rather be Marvin Lewis or Marty Schottenheimer? I think Marty Schottenheimer's probably
neither.
I think Marty Schottenheimer's career coaching record has got to be better than Marvin Lewis's.
I think Marty Schottenheimer's generally thought to be a better coach than Marvin. I'm looking at Marty Schottenheimer's career record in Cleveland. He won the division 3 times in 5 years in Cleveland in the late 80s with Bernie Kosar. He made the playoffs practically every year he was a head coach.
Yeah.
The Bengals did not do that under Marvin Lewis.
Somebody says Marvin Lewis wasn't a jerk in his press conferences. He used a different word. Somebody else says, dude, I stood up alone and booed the bleep out of Rick Smith, and then the rest of the section joined me after a few seconds of wondering what the hell I was doing. It's a way to be a leader.
It's wildfire.
I give him a message like, oh yeah, boo, boo.
All right. John McClain is going to join us at the top of the hour. We will get his thoughts on all of this. We'll do headlines in about 15 minutes. And up next, interesting poll on which Texan you would rather give $28.5 million guaranteed to. We will tell you who the players involved are and would Seth give.
Did I say Cleveland when I was talking about Marty Schottenheimer?
Well, he coached in Cleveland. You said Kansas City, but he coached in both places.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. But Kansas City was the one where they had the most success.
He had good success in Cleveland, too. Yeah. I mean, they made the AFC title game a couple times. So you're good. We'll do that next.
Right. I did that same thing to you that I despise when people do to me.
What did you do for those just
I asked
you,
I doubled down. I asked you a question you didn't know the answer to, right. And then I asked the same question again.
I still didn't know the answer.
And it was like, why?
I felt bad that I didn't find out the answer in the 3 seconds in between the first time.
This is what I did. We were discussing the fact that Bill O'Brien got booed at the Houston Sports Awards last night. I was unaware of this because I had other duties that I was attending to.
Right.
And I asked Sean the question, well, Marty Schottenheimer is a coach who, especially with Kansas City and San Diego, had great regular season success, but then miserable playoff success. Did he get booed at things like local?
Like the Kansas City Sports Awards.
It's like the Kansas City. And Sean said, as he should, I don't know. It's not generally.
And then you asked me about the next city.
Yeah, but do you think he got booed like that in San Diego?
Or still don't know.
Did Marvin Lewis get booed at local events
still
that
don't
aren't
know.
Broadcast
I nationally? Still don't know. I still haven't found the answer out.
This is what
since 8 seconds ago.
See, like if Brandy asked me some question like, Seth, what are the actual measurements of a 2x4? Am I I don't know. And she might say, because you know it's not 2 inches by 4 inches, it's actually less. Do you know what they are? But no, I just told you.
Still don't know.
I don't know. There's nothing harder. This is they've done studies on this. It's very, very difficult for men to say they don't know something. So it takes great. Women are better at it. They just don't have the bloated egos that we do, apparently.
Yeah.
But for men have a hard time saying, I don't know. So when you ask them to do it twice, it's almost like kicking them in the nards.
Salt in the eyes.
No.
Boy, you brought up Marty Schottenheimer, and I promise we're going to get to what we teased here. But as long as I'm looking at this, it's an interesting question because, you know, if Bill O'Brien had a career like Marty Schottenheimer, how would we look at him? I think most fans nowadays would still be like, he's a playoff failure, which is a fact with Marty Schottenheimer, especially in Kansas City, where he didn't make it past the divisional round. Right. He actually had great success in Cleveland in the late 80s. He made the AFC title game twice with Bernie Kosar as his quarterback. He had a couple of seasons, Seth, 1995 and 1997, where the Chiefs went 13-3, and I guess this is something that, you know, like I probably saw this stuff as we were looking at the Chiefs playoff history.
Yeah.
And, you know, recently because the Texans were playing the Chiefs. And I just didn't realize Schottenheimer was the coach. But they lost to Jim Harbaugh and the Indianapolis Colts in 1995. And then they lost to the Broncos, who eventually won the Super Bowl in 1997 at home as a 13-3 team.
Well, but think about Schottenheimer, though. What I look at Schottenheimer's career record, and all I can think is, Cleveland, what the hell were you guys thinking? Like, they went to two AFC championships in 4 years. He made the playoff every single year.
Yep.
He was never worse. After his first season of 8-8, where they still made the playoffs, he was never worse than 10-6.
Yep.
Or 10-5 in the regular. 10-5.
10-5. That was the.
Shortened season.
Shortened season.
So that was part of the. Okay.
Yeah. It was a strike season. Yeah.
What happened? What happened after 1988? That they moved on to greener pastures. Apparently.
Why was he 10-5 in that year though? The coaches still coached that
this
year.
Might be
they?
A Wikipedia issue.
It could be.
Are you on Wikipedia?
I'm on Wikipedia. Okay. But your point, it doesn't matter. Your point is well taken, which is the dude was a double digit win coach who got to two AFC title games.
So that's different than Bill O'Brien, who hasn't left the divisional round. So he's had, and the thing about Schottenheimer that was so weird was it wasn't like he was plunking together these 9-7 seasons or anything. He was routinely
double
10 wins plus. 1994 was the only year that he won a measly. Well, let's see. No, there were 3 years in his entire tenure there over the course of a decade where he only won 9 games.
Yeah. In Kansas City, you're talking about.
Yeah, in Kansas City. Yeah. In Kansas City, he had very good regular season success, but then had big disappointments in the playoffs.
Never made it past a divisional round in the playoffs. So Kansas City Schottenheimer is probably the best Bill O'Brien doppelganger.
Well, and I'll tell you, too, the other thing about Schottenheimer, and you talk about the importance of a division, because when, you know, people point out that Bill O'Brien has had these division victories, remember that the first two division victories came with 9-7 records.
Yep.
Whereas a guy like Schottenheimer, like, oh, he didn't have, you know, hey, Bill O'Brien's got more divisional victories and championships than Marty Schottenheimer with Kansas City. Well, he went 11-5, got second in the AFC West. 10-6 twice gave him second in the AFC West.
Yep.
You know, like he had these great records that were still only good enough for second in the AFC West.
Yeah, it was structured a little different back then. There were only three divisions, not four.
Oh, there were five teams in a division.
Yeah,
too,
so yeah. It should be pointed out. But
that's why, Sean, when I won the AFC Central back then, 16, Sean.
Yeah.
Six teams. I mean, one of them was the Browns by that point.
Still.
But still.
That's hard. 16 division, man. God, do you remember the 1 year Marty Schottenheimer was in Washington? He was the Redskins coach for a year. He was 8-8, and I guess they fired him. Then he went to San Diego.
So
I think they replaced him with Steve Spurrier.
So you might be tuning in and saying, why the hell are Seth and Sean going back to Marty Schottenheimer? The answer is this. Bill O'Brien was booed at the Houston Sports Awards last night when they introduced him as a nominee for Coach of the Year.
That's right.
And we were just trying to figure out, okay, dissimilar coaches like Marvin Lewis or Marty Schottenheimer, were they getting booed locally around those times? Do people think it's warranted that Bill O'Brien would get booed? I get very uncomfortable in situations like that. Like, frankly, in a situation like that last night, it would take a pretty extreme example for me to feel comfortable with booing anybody. So that was I don't know what to say about like how much it takes other people to boo in a situation like that.
Yeah, well, that to me is the biggest thing. First, let me just be very clear. The booing was very sporadic. This was not, you know, I don't know how many people were in that room. Let's say 2,000 people are in that room.
There weren't people throwing brick bats.
No, okay. And there weren't 2,000 people booing either. Very sporadic. But to me, it's still significant because of the time and place. It's an award show with a bunch of high-dollar tables in there. Probably people who spend a lot of money on Texan tickets, and there were a few of them who felt compelled to boo.
That was, by the way, brick bats. You know that used to be, have you ever heard that phrase before?
No, I have not.
It's little chunks of bricks that they used to throw at people when they disapproved. It's kind of
crazy harsh.
How brutish people used to be. Well, I was reading, because, when Frederick Douglass was going around giving the speaking tours back in the day, during the abolitionist era, up north, you know, where everybody was so enlightened, right? Brickbats, like getting stuff thrown at him. The thing about Frederick Douglass is he was a big dude. Like he had to literally fight his way out of a few of these towns, these small towns in upstate New York and Ohio and everything on his way out of some of these speeches. But that part of it was they'd throw brickbats, like chunks of brick at him.
That's crazy. All right, so we're going to do headlines here in a few minutes. Rivers McCown posted this on Twitter. This is a good poll question, especially considering one of these two players has been paid. Rivers McCown, who does a great job covering and writing about the Texans, doing mostly analysis on the Texans, does a nice job. If I am giving $28.5 million guaranteed to one of these players, 2020 in their ages in the 2020 season, would it be DJ Reader or Whitney Mercilus?
Mm-hmm.
It should be pointed out that Whitney Mercilus has gotten his $28.5 million guaranteed. That's why that's the number, is they signed Whitney to a four-year deal with $28.5 million guaranteed, $54 million overall. DJ Reader's a free agent that the team, I think, wants to have back, but I think wants to have back on their terms. That would appear to be the case just reading the tea leaves, Seth, because the two sides have not agreed to a deal.
Yeah.
And it's looking like DJ Reader could become a free agent.
From what I've heard, the numbers that I heard, and I'm not a reporter, I'm not going to report the numbers I heard, but the numbers that I heard were that DJ was offered a respectable enough number, but not one that I don't think it's one that... The number I heard doesn't sound like how much I think he'll get in free agency.
Okay.
So I think he'll get over $10 million per year in free agency. He hasn't necessarily been offered that yet by the Texans. So
okay.
I don't know if the Texans are going to pull a Chris Meyer strategy where they let him hit free agency and get a feel for it. It's kind of hard to gauge. DJ's a tough guy to figure the value on because teams are going to look at him as a run stuffer that can play on third down. But he's more of a run stuffer than a pass rusher. But as run stuffers go, he does a really good job pressing the pocket. He gets a lot more. He's got more pressures than some guys that would be considered more of a hybrid run stuffer pass rusher.
Yeah.
He's never going to be a big time sack artist or anything. So I think the Texans are looking at him and thinking, all right, there's probably one or two or three teams out there that really like DJ Reader and maybe are in the cap space to spend a lot of money on a two down player that can play on third down. But maybe there isn't this year. Maybe somehow that it's not going to work out, so we're just going to compete for him in the open market.
That's where he's going to wind up, I think, Seth.
Yeah.
And I'm not naming a specific team. I'm just going to say the type of team or the team, the profile of the team that DJ Reader is going to wind up with is a team that has a ton of cap space and can afford a $14 million a year defensive tackle as a luxury item. A good $14 million, a good... 3-4, three technique type that can push the pocket and things like that. They're a team with a ton of cap space that can overspend a little bit on a DJ Reader. That's who's going to wind up with DJ Reader. And the Texans are not that team. They've got way too many other needs to fill. By the way, the poll that Rivers put up, 85% of the people who voted in the poll, there were over 1,000 people that voted, said that they would give $28.5 million to DJ Reader ahead of Whitney Mercer.
Right, and I guess that comes down to, okay, how much guaranteed money is DJ Reader going to get? And is he going to get more than that? And defensive tackles are all over the board, again, because some guys are viewed more as...
I bet he gets more
pass
than that.
Pass rushers and what have you. You know, it's interesting. Like, Geno Atkins, now he signed his deal a couple years back. And that was 2018. He got $17 million guaranteed at signing. Mm-hmm. But he's got an average salary of $16 million a year. So Geno Atkins is a guy that teams look at as a more dynamic player, a more dynamic athlete. You know, and he's not going to be as good at plugging the run, but he makes plays against the run, and he makes plays in the passing game. So Geno Atkins is a guy that is more of a $17 million a year type of guy.
Yeah.
If DJ were to get $11 million a year, that's going to be that's top 10 for, I think, 3-4 interior linemen. But I think it'll be more than that.
I think he's getting more than 11.
Star Latulele is making $18 million a year.
Yeah,
you know,
I think DJ is going to get about 13 or 14 million a year from somebody.
Yeah.
And I think he gets more than $28.5 million guaranteed.
So, like, let's say hypothetically the Texans had offered him $9 million. That's not going to cut it. And
no, I'd do the same thing DJ Reader's doing, which is wait it out and hit free agency.
I wonder, though, too, okay, now that Chris Olsen is gone, is there somebody manning the shop or they just kind of put things on hiatus? Sometimes teams, I would say personally, the weirdest year I ever had was I was coming off of injury and I was going to be a free agent in 2005, and I didn't hear anything from the Texans right up on through free agency, no offers or anything. So I flew off the first day of free agency to go up to visit the Jets, and by 4 p.m. that afternoon, I had a deal with the Houston Texans.
Yeah, you applied a little leverage.
Yeah, they just said,
unwittingly.
Right. That was before I was on my way to dinner with Marvin Lewis.
Yeah,
Herm Edwards. And because we were just talking about Marvin Lewis, I was on my way to dinner with Herm Edwards, and I got the call that said, "Hey, don't go to dinner. We got a deal."
So did you still go to dinner?
No, I had to tell the poor kid that was driving me, hey, take me to the airport.
Take me to LaGuardia.
So did you even meet Herm Edwards?
No, I didn't. I left him standing at the altar.
That kind of disappoints me. I would have loved a good Herm Edwards story.
I felt bad about it. I felt weird. I don't think he wasn't at dinner yet or anything. They were taking me to the hotel so I could get changed and go to dinner.
Okay, gotcha. Yeah. Gotcha. How good were the Jets back then when you were looking at them?
I don't even remember. Yeah. I heard Chad Pennington. I saw Chad Pennington at an awards ceremony the next year.
Okay, so now I know. You named Chad, and I'm not, this is no disrespect to Chad Pennington. I'm like, okay, it was the Pennington era Jets.
It was, yeah, they were competing.
Yeah.
There was, they were potentially.
They weren't awful.
Yeah, I was going to be the key.
You were the missing piece. I get that. Yeah.
I saw Pennington, but Pennington knew the story. So somehow the story.
About you standing up, Herm Edwards at Morton's?
Because the award they gave us were these. They gave us at the Ed Block Courage Award these pewter helmets. Like, they would give us our team, but it would be covered in pewter. It was really bad. It's my favorite trophy I still have. But Chad Pennington got his, and he walked by my table, and he was like, "This could have been you, Seth."
Or can you imagine if he got belligerent with you? Like, he really loved Herm Edwards. He's like, "Oh, an ironic Courage Award for a coward who didn't even show up at a dinner and tell him to our face that you didn't want to come here."
Yeah.
Do you think Herm still went and had the dinner that night? I feel like you would. I feel like if you got stood up for dinner, you'd be like, screw it. Give me the porterhouse.
It's on the expense account already.
Right.
I've already got it budgeted. Yeah,
it's on the black card.
Yeah.
That's great. Let's do some headlines. Houston Sports Awards last night and the big awards. Alex Bregman, Athlete of the Year. Jose Altuve, Moment of the Year, his home run in Game 6. Coach of the Year, Kelvin Sampson. And the highlights of the night, the Hall of Fame class inducted Mary Lou Retton, Carl Lewis, Rudy Tomjanovich, all go into the Houston Sports Hall of Fame. And then, of course, the Lifetime Achievement Award given posthumously to the late Bob McNair. John McClain, who's going to jump in with us here in about 10 minutes or so, did the very beginning of the presentation. And then Jerry Jones did an amazing job presenting Bob McNair. If you go back and listen to the podcast from yesterday's afternoon show, Clint Sterner and I interviewed Jerry Jones, which was kind of cool because Clint used to play for Jerry. Jerry Jones called Clint Sterner the best-looking quarterback that ever played for him. Seth, I feel like this is a topic that's up your alley. Is Clint Sterner the best-looking Dallas Cowboys quarterback of the Jerry Jones era?
Well, you know what's interesting? I think Troy Aikman, I've always tried to figure this out. I feel like Troy Aikman is regarded by some as good-looking, and it's purely because of his status and his success and all of that. I think he's the perfect example of a guy that, if you were just your average dude, would not strike you as that.
No,
and yet somehow women look at him and like, oh, Troy Aikman.
Well, he you know, when he was a Cowboys quarterback, he was a big strapping guy.
Yeah.
You know, he had the hair and everything. Yeah. You know, just really nice head of hair.
Yeah.
And he was the Dallas Cowboys quarterback. And
but he's kind of beady-eyed and everything, you know?
Yeah.
Same thing with, like, Tony Romo. Now, I guess Dak Prescott would probably be the best-looking quarterback.
Until he's retired, and then he's going to be a hideous beast like these other guys. I'm going to vote Clint Sterner.
Yeah.
Clint Sterner's gotten more handsome with age.
Clint Sterner's got that Ted Johnson kind of alpha male quality about him. You just look at him, and you're like, well, that's a football player.
Yeah. So our headline about the Houston Sports Awards was you and I discussing whether or not Clint Sterner is handsome.
My biggest thrill of the night was obviously getting an interview Mary Lou Retton, because she was just such an icon.
You're going to say Ronald McDonald.
No, but also listening to Carl Lewis's speech. I thought Carl Lewis did everything. Carl Lewis did everything that you want to do in one of these speeches. He gave a personal story. He gave a little bit of philosophy. And then he gave some words of advice to the youngsters out there. Like, he's got it nailed. He knows exactly how to give the Olympian speeches.
He got really the music dropped on him, too. He was going a little
long. Right. But he acknowledged the music and made a joke about it. So did Rudy T.
Yeah.
Mary Lou Retton got all teary and was talking about her daughters. That was really special.
Who presented her. That was great. The Rockets play the Nuggets tonight at Toyota Center. The Rockets have lost four in a row. It's January in the regular season, so I'm not going to sit here and go, this is a must win tonight for the Rockets. But boy, this is a team that's second in the Western Conference right now, the Nuggets. I'll just say this. I'll couch it this way. The Rockets could really, really, really use this win tonight against the Nuggets to get feeling good about themselves again, Seth.
This is, I talked to the Red Rowdies last night. Not all of them.
I know,
but
they practically adopted you.
Like 10 of them.
Like Jon Snow with the Wildlings.
Well, I tried it, you know, and I was like, come on, guys, tell me, what's your opinion on James Harden? What the hell's going on?
Right.
And, I got various opinions and whatnot. We talked about Chris Paul a little bit. One of the Red Rowdies was saying, you know, that she thought that they'd be better off with Chris Paul. And I said, well, if he were healthy. You have to recognize that.
Which he is now. He's healthy as a horse.
Sports Illustrated put out a bogus article where they cited season-long stats showing the plus-minus with Russell Westbrook and everything. And season-long, the stats don't look good. since Russell Westbrook got back on track, as Adam Spolane pointed out in an article on Sports Radio 610 yesterday, they've been very, very good. So they're plus six or seven when Harden is off the floor and Russell Westbrook is on now.
Since he stopped shooting threes.
Right. Since Westbrook started being a little bit more Westbrook and a little less Houston Rockets, they've been very good. Harden's got to fix his shot. He's been shooting 20% since he was. And
you're not going to win games.
He does this thing where sometimes when he fades to the right after his shot, that's when his shot goes askew, and he was getting away with it for a little while. I think somehow that might have been him getting away with it for a little while, might have all of a sudden jumped up and grabbed him. So now that he's really working on purifying his shot again, and his look, Harden, when he struggles with his shot, remember, he's not just struggling with a spot up three. He's struggling with a step back three that he created for himself. That's where it gets kind of scary and ugly. It's just a matter of him getting it right.
All right, so Rockets tonight against the Denver Nuggets. Hall of Fame baseball yesterday, they announced their Hall of Fame class for the upcoming summer. Two guys getting in, Seth, Derek Jeter and Larry Walker. After many, many years on the ballot, Larry Walker, who apparently didn't take any PEDs nor play for a team that cheated. He merely played in a ballpark that was set up like a pinball machine for many, many years. Larry Walker, good player. He's going into the Hall of Fame, along with Derek Jeter, who I kind of like the fact that
one vote.
I normally do not take up for people. I'm not taking up for the guy. Normally on stuff like this, I get mad at the one person who didn't vote for somebody who probably should have been unanimous.
But nobody's been unanimous.
Mariano Rivera was last year.
Hardly anybody. So
Mariano Rivera is the only one.
Right.
Yeah.
Hardly anybody. Yeah. So that one person probably feels that way. That he shouldn't be unanimous because he hasn't earned that. There are other players that are better than Derek Jeter. He's such an interesting nut to crack because he has some holes in his game, which sometimes people go a little too far in acting like, no, he wasn't actually that great because he has these holes in his game. He's a first ballot Hall of Famer. That's flat out.
Yeah.
And to not vote him in on the first ballot, you're just kind of being a persnickety curmudgeon.
Yeah, I guess. I like it because Derek Jeter's been a nightmare as an owner of the Miami Marlins. So I feel like this is going to stick in Jeter's craw. I'm cool with it.
Kurt Schilling gained 9% more of the votes. He's about 5% shy.
He's got two more shots.
He's gained 9% a year for the last two or three years.
Yeah.
So he's got 2 years to gain 5%. Roger Clemens and Barry Bonds, it's looking a little dicey. Those guys both have two more years left. They're both right around 60%.
Yeah, they both upticked like 1% from 59 to 60. So they need to pick up some steam these last couple
years.
Yeah,
we need a push.
You want them in? I want them in.
I want them in because they're both, it's a standard look. You got to change the move. It's a moving scale for the steroid era.
Yeah.
Especially because I don't know, Roger, maybe I'm a schmuck, but I believe that whatever was sent to Roger's house, it was not like a long term. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know.
So last night in college basketball, Kansas was playing Kansas State. And it was a blowout in Kansas. No big surprise, right? I mean, Kansas is a really good team. They were beating Kansas State 81-59. And then down the stretch in this game in the last few minutes, Kansas is just dribbling the ball out. In fact, let's play the play-by-play from the television broadcast because Kansas is dribbling the ball out, and then this ensued.
And a block to finish. And DeSosa blocks it, and now the bench is empty. Just unnecessary.
Yep. That's not good.
This is a punt call. This is bad. No good. Oh, this is terrible.
Yeah. Take it down. Yeah, there's just a bunch of people yelling and stuff. It was a brawl at the end of the game. The Jayhawks are dribbling out the clock when Silvio D'Souza of Kansas, Seth, was stripped by DeJuan Gordon near midcourt. It's one of those things, D'Souza's just dribbling the ball, waiting for the clock to run out, and this tryhard on Kansas State comes up, steals the ball, goes in for a layup. D'Souza swats it into the second row, stands over him, and then it turns into a brawl. The players from both benches clear. It spills into the crowd. D'Souza's grabbing a chair and holding it over his head. It was ugly, and they're going to be big-time suspensions.
He's
holding a chair over his head.
Like he was John Philip Sousa. Who the hell is John Philip Sousa?
I think he was a composer or something.
Yeah, like he was conducting an orchestra with a chair or something.
He was a little stool. Like, he was practically waving it around.
Honestly, after D'Souza, I couldn't stop thinking John Philip Sousa in my head. It was a scene, man. It was crazy. I honestly can sympathize, empathize with a kid from Kansas State there's sometimes you just snap at the heel on the end at the end of a blowout. Sometimes you just can't take it any longer. So you're down how many points at that point?
They were down 20. They were down 22.
They're down 20 with seconds remaining, and sometimes you just say, "Ah, screw it."
Okay.
So you say, now as John Philip Sousa, you need to realize, look, I'm John freaking Philip Sousa, and I'm just gonna let this guy have his moment. Right. He's angry. I'm just gonna let it go.
He did not do that. Yeah.
I'm not gonna go get suspended and potentially harm our seating in the tournament at the end of the year.
Yeah, I'm pretty proud of myself. John Philip Sousa, an American composer and conductor.
I think he was like the
late Romantic era. Yeah, okay. Yeah.
Oh, sure, the late romance.
The late Romantic era. Yeah.
Romantic era, is that like a booty call? Is that like John Philip 3 a.m. Sousa?
Every night's a Romantic era for me.
76 trombones went back to my apartment.
Real quick.
You can look at my sketches right now.
Okay, you just said, I could go on with this forever. You just said that at the end of a blowout, sometimes it's very frustrating. Yeah. Have you ever been the guy that's jumped over the offensive line when the quarterback's taking a knee?
I'm going to tell you what I've done before. I did this with the Houston Texans, and I believe we were facing the Kansas City Chiefs. You'd have to go back and find which game this was. I'm going to say it was a night game, and we were getting the crap beat out of us.
Okay.
There was a loose ball. There was a loose ball down on the goal line. We were about to get scored on, pretty positive. And it might have been midway through the fourth quarter, and I said, I'm either going to get this football or I'm going to get ejected. And I went to town on some dude.
Just, do you remember who it was?
Like winding up, punching him. No, I have no idea. I don't know if it was an offensive lineman or I don't know who was trying to go after the ball. I didn't know at the time. I still don't know.
So you got in some cheap shots.
I gave just like, nah, look, he could see him coming. He couldn't, he couldn't move because he was pinned at the bottom of the pile. And I'm like, I'm either going to get this football or I'm getting thrown out of this game. And nothing, I think the refs had all checked out by that point. Somebody pulled me off of him and I didn't get ejected. Honestly, kind of a quitter move by me. I didn't want to be out there anymore.
And the ref eject you.
I was like, I can't put up with letting these guys score another touchdown. It's all or nothing.
Haymakers.
Yeah.
Did you stand over him and say, I hope you die, like you did to Matt
once.
O'Dwyer?
No.
Is it Matt O'Dwyer that you did that to?
Yeah. We chatted about it. We made up.
You did?
Matt O'Dwyer.
That day or many years later?
We both acknowledged dirtiness on our parts.
Like, was it like on Radio Row? I feel like that's where a lot of the hatchets get buried nowadays among retired players. On Radio Row at the Super Bowl.
No, we did. Well, what happened was Matt O'Dwyer, who's kind of a cheap shot artist back before everything got fined all the time, I drove him over a pile, and he tore his MCL, and I didn't like him. So I said that as he was writhing in pain on the ground, I stood over him, and I just watched Tombstone. So I said, I hope you die. And so we had a laugh.
Can you imagine? He's holding his knee, and he points up, and he's like, Tombstone!
The next time I saw him was later that year, I think, when he was on the sideline with crutches before the game, and I went up to him.
Hey, buddy.
Had a chat with him, and we laughed.
Did you apologize?
No.
Because it was a football play.
We just laughed. We both acknowledged our wrongdoings, and we moved on.
You should have let it. You know what you should have done just to make it even is let him hit you with his crutch.
Yeah. We
padded, like in your pads and your helmet, but you should have let him wind up and hit you in the head with his crutch.
You know, I think about the thing about O'Dwyer and I, like we both could tell that if we were on the same team together, we'd probably be workout buddies.
Yeah.
You know, it was just, we were both of like-minded, meatheadedness.
You had more in common than you thought. You are listening to KILT and KILT HD2, a radio.com station.
By the way, somebody's upset with us for making fun of South Central Pennsylvania. It's apparently some Amish dude who learned how to use the internet or something. Go, dude, get back to your farm. Get back to your gas-powered... Your gas-powered power tools, which some Mennonites allow. You're not supposed to be on your phone right now.
I used to have to drive through there in the middle of the night back and forth from college. It's not... Yeah, no, dude, You may be one of the normal ones from that part of the country, but it's a weird part of the country. That's all I'm going
to
say.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.